Principles of spiritual life. They are Daya. Daya means, we're going to talk about one of the four. We're talking about Satyam. Satyam means truthfulness. So there's four principles of spiritual life, basic principles of spiritual life. Satyam means truthfulness, to speak the truth. Daya is compassion. Tapa means austerity, or to be more easily identifiable if we say self-mastery, being able to control and understand how to live within a material body, control of the self, not being run by the senses. That's tapa. And the final one is sotu, which is purity, cleanliness. Purity? Sotcham. Sotcham. So sotcham, tapa, daya, and satyam. Satyam is the one we'll talk about today, truthfulness. In the Bhagavad Gita, before we go delving into truthfulness, what's going to happen today is I have to go on the altar in 20 minutes. So I'll go over the topic of satyam and the purpose of these four spiritual principles. Then Satya Prabhu will be going over the introduction, because we should have read the introduction, and we should have also read the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita the entire week. Starting Monday, we'll go into the second chapter and read the second chapter every day of the week. So we'll have a discussion. Satya will lead that discussion on the introduction and the first chapter. Then next week we'll go into the second chapter. So, the purpose of these four principles of spirituality, Satyam, Socham, Tapa, and Daya, the whole purpose is to help us, the conditioned living entities, to recognize that we exist on two levels. We exist in a world of matter as well as a world of spirit. We are spiritual beings. There's a famous French philosopher, Chardin. He said it very well, actually. He said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience, which is actually quite accurate. We are a soul within a body. So we exist as a soul, but we live in a world of matter. These four spiritual principles are to get us to the point where we recognize we exist on two different levels. Both real. We are soul, so that's a reality, our spiritual reality. Though because we're so covered, we don't always recognize that spiritual reality. And then the material reality, the world that we live in. So these four principles are to bring us to the understanding, to a level, at least a theoretical level of understanding, that there are two realities in which we're living. We do not just exist on a reality of matter. So, today we're talking about satyam. Satyam is truthfulness. Now there's a flip side to that. We practice truthfulness, and it's commonly, in the Bhagavatam, it's said that the counter to that, or the negative, is to engage in acts of gambling. That destroys truthfulness. Obviously, because we're trying to, and the reason why it talks about gambling being the antithesis, if you will, of truthfulness, is because in gambling, it's the principle. The principle is to get something for little or nothing. Cheating, thank you. To get something for little or nothing. That mentality is actually very, very detrimental to our spiritual progression because it gives us the idea that we do not have to give up something. There's no cost. There is no price for spirituality. And there is a price. And we don't always like to hear that there's a cost for spirituality. We want it to be free. But there is a cost. Not in money, not in a negative sense. But there's a cost, there's a price, and that we have to give up something. We have to let go of something in order to achieve something else. Two examples. We have the example of the little baby. She's playing with a knife. And she thinks she's having a great time. But that can quickly turn into a tragedy. If you take away the knife from the child, she's going to scream and cry and make a temper tantrum. So we have to get the child to let go of the knife, so we offer something more palatable, perhaps a set of keys, so she can jingle the keys, and she automatically drops the knife. If we just try to take the knife, we're going to get a temper tantrum from the child. So we have to offer something else so that the child can drop the knife and accept something else. So this propensity of trying to get something for nothing, cheating, this gives us the mentality that our spiritual life does not require us to give up something. And what we have to give, we talk about satyam. Satyam means truth. Satyam, the same word is also used to describe eternal. Sat. Sat means that which lasts forever. Eternal. Eternality. The same Sanskrit word is used to describe both realities. We are the reservoir or repository of happiness. We have happiness within us. The problem is that the truth that we do not recognize, well, that is the truth we do not recognize. We do not recognize that we have happiness within us. So we look for happiness outside of ourselves. In our job, in our studies, in our spouse, in our family. Not saying that that's not a source of pleasure, but because we always pursuing things outside of us, we do not recognize the truth. The truth is, we have happiness within us. Of course, at our stage, it's just theory. We hear about it, okay, but how to achieve that, that's the whole sadhana process. But the truth is, we are the embodiments. We are spirit beings in a material reality. Our spiritual reality is that we are our own happiness. We don't need all these other things to be happy. That is the greatest spiritual truth of all. So this idea that we can get something for nothing or something for little of nothing, it gets in the way of our recognizing we have to give something up. What do we have to give up in order to achieve this understanding, this realization that our happiness is within? What we have to give up is an idea. We have to give up the idea that my spouse is the source of happiness. We have to give up the idea that my car is the source of my happiness. We have to give up the idea that my career and money, fame, reputation are the source of happiness. This is what we have to give. We have to give up a particular idea, a mentality. That's why the principle of satyam is so important in pursuing our spiritual life. Because when we break, if you will, this principle of satyam, when we have this mentality of getting something for nothing or something for less as possible. Now, it's one thing, I'm not saying we shouldn't cut coupons and find a shortcut to get what we need. Of course we should do that. I'm talking about when you break the law, when you try to break a principle to get something for less. If there's some kind of a deal that we're trying to get, that's legal, that's not a problem. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the idea of lying, cheating, doing everything we can in order to get something for little or nothing. If we have that mentality, that translates unconsciously into our spiritual practice where we do not understand that we have to let go of something. The price of spirituality is dropping a mentality. It doesn't mean we have to give up. No, let's make this very clear. It doesn't mean we have to give up our car. It doesn't mean we have to give up our family. It doesn't mean we have to burn down our house. Absolutely not. It's just a thought. It's a mentality. It's an understanding that these things, I can have all these things. I can be a billionaire, Bill Gates, so long as I still understand and I actually achieve and experience happiness from within. When we get to the sixth chapter, no. When we get to the fifth chapter, when we're reading that chapter throughout the week, it talks about the happiness within. When we experience the happiness within, it doesn't matter whether or not we're billionaires, because we carry our happiness with us. There's another example of a monkey. He has his hand in a pot. Within the pot, there's a banana. So the monkey, he sticks his hand in the pot and he grabs the banana, but he cannot pull his hand out of the pot because now his hand with the banana does not fit through the neck of the pot. So the monkey is trapped. It's the same idea. In spirituality, we're holding on to this idea that these things are the source of my happiness. So we hold on to them, and so long as we hold on to them, we're trapped in a material mentality. What happens if the monkey lets go? He lets go, two things happen. The monkey gets freedom. This is freedom. And the monkey can get far more happiness from the fruits of the forest. That's exactly how it works. If we let go of this banana that traps us in a material concept, all we have is that one banana. If we let go, we get complete freedom, and our spiritual happiness far outweighs our material happiness. The monkey of the forest has far more bananas, all types of fruits with which to enjoy. And this is very important we understand is when we have this spiritual realization. It talks about this in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Spiritual happiness far outweighs anything material. The only problem is we don't know that. We've never experienced it. So we're going to go with what we know, right? Someone says, oh, Mahavishnu, this is such a wonderful thing. If I've never tried it before, I have no experience of it. Someone's just saying, oh, I heard it's very nice. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that tries new things to begin with. So I'm a little skeptical. We're very skeptical because all we know is that from the time we were children, we've been holding on to keys and all these different things we thought made us happy. And indeed, they give us gratification. Absolutely. I'm not saying that these little things don't. We see a nice movie, we get satisfied. We eat nice prasadam, a meal, we get satisfied. Right? I'm not saying these things are not there. The key is, the best measure is understanding what happens when we take those things away. If someone takes away our job, how do we deal with that? That gives us a measure of our material attachment. If someone takes away our spouse, how do we react to that? That gives us a measure of our spiritual maturity. It doesn't mean that we do not try to protect our spouse. We do not try to protect our house. We do not try to protect all these different things. But if we feel that our happiness is dependent upon an external reality, that's where we have a misunderstanding. So spirituality is all about, these four principles of spirituality are all about bringing us to the understanding, number one, that there's a spiritual reality and a material reality. Two, we live in two levels, two dimensions. This particular principle, satyam, truthfulness, that is, for which gambling is an obstacle, cheating is an obstacle, it speaks to the point of the mentality of not, of thinking that we can get something for nothing or little of nothing. Thus giving us the understanding or the mentality to think that we do not have to give something up for our spiritual life. We do. We have to give up, like the monkey lets go of the banana, we have to give up just a thought, a mentality. Nothing changes externally. We go to work, we have our family, we take care of our spouse, everything. Nothing changes externally. There's a wonderful saying. I don't know if it's Buddhist or... No, could be. Anyways, from a Buddhist author. He wrote, Before realization, chop wood, carry water. After realization, chop wood, carry water. Nothing changes externally. Realization has changed. Understanding has changed. A purifying of our ego has changed. We are now getting happiness from within, but we're still chopping wood and carrying water. So we can have all the career, the this, all these things, that's irrelevant. What we have to let go is the idea, this attachment, really. Not an idea, it's an attachment to this idea that all these things are the source of happiness. Now, we talk about attachment, detachment, this is a whole nother, going in a different vein here, but we cannot artificially give something up. Just like the little baby, if you take the knife away, she's going to scream, cry, make a complete temper tantrum. You cannot artificially give something up. It has to be replaced with something higher. Krishna says this. This week we'll be talking about, we'll be reading the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We'll see in the second chapter, towards the end of the second chapter, Krishna says this very point. He says, only by experiencing a higher taste can you give up the lower. So I'm saying, oh, we have to give up this idea, this mentality, that all these things make us happy. But the only way we can give this up is by experiencing something better. Otherwise, we are, and that's another thing, we are pleasure seekers by nature. It talks about this in the Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures. The soul is all about pleasure and happiness. So if we're not experiencing spiritual pleasure, we're going to try to experience material pleasure. Absolutely. So for me to say, don't experience material pleasure, don't pursue material pleasure, when you're not experiencing, we are not experiencing spiritual pleasure, that is a recipe for failure. Because that's what we do. We are pleasure seeking. We are the embodiments of pleasure, the spirit soul. So to say, stop pursuing pleasure in the material dimension, but we're not receiving or experiencing spiritual pleasure, is a recipe for failure. The only way we can drop, let go of this banana that is taking away our freedom, that is hampering our ability to experience far more pleasure, the only way is by, like in the case of the child, giving something better so that she drops the knife. And experience something better. So going back to satyam, and I'll end on this particular point, that's this principle of satyam. So in practicing satyam, truthfulness, is the whole purpose of practicing truthfulness. Oh, that's the second point, very briefly. Why do we lie? The reason why we lie is very simple. Self-preservation is the first law of nature. That's why we lie. We're trying to preserve our happiness. That's why we lie. Every lie we've ever told is because we're trying to preserve an idea or a thing that we believe is going to keep us happy. We lie because we lie about our grades, because if we get bad grades and tell our parents are going to take away our allowance. So we lie. We meet someone for the first time, we tell them we are millionaires when we're not. Why do we make this lie? Because we fear that they're going to reject us. We lie because we fear losing happiness. If we have happiness within, if we're always experiencing happiness within, we will never lie. There's nothing to lie about because we're not trying to preserve our happiness. We are sitting in an ocean of happiness. There's no reason to lie. Later on, think this through. Every lie you've ever told, it goes back to the mentality that if I don't say this, if I utter this lie, or if I tell the truth rather, I'm going to experience displeasure. So let me lie so that I can keep experiencing pleasure in this way. I continue to be accepted. I continue to receive love. I continue to receive money. I continue to receive these things, which we know are just ideas that we're going to achieve happiness. So if we're experiencing pleasure from within, satyam, truthfulness, is automatic because we have no reason to lie, to cheat. So understanding this principle of satyam, which is why we practice the principle of satyam, truthfulness, is to give us the understanding that our happiness comes from within. There's no need to lie. There's no need to cheat. Because if our happiness comes from within, we don't have no happiness to try to protect from all around us. the idea of how cheating and lying destroys our ability. Remember, the mentality is that I can get something for nothing. I can scratch a ticket and get $1 million. I can lie and get this. I can lie and get that. I can cheat and get this. It perpetuates the mentality that I do not have to give up something to achieve spiritual maturity. We do have to give up something. We have to give up an attachment to an idea. Not anything material on this. We don't have to give up houses, spouses, cars, all these different things. We just have to give up an idea. That's the purpose of this principle, Satya. I will finish there. Satya will take over. I have to go on the altar. He'll go over the introduction and the. I'll bring the sadhaka charts so you have those. And he'll go over the any questions or discussion period about the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And next week we'll go over the. We'll read in our own time every day the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the translations. It's a long chapter. There are 72 texts in that chapter, so it takes about 12. To 15 minutes, depending on your how you read, how much you're able to comprehend. And then the following Sunday, next Sunday, we'll go over the principle of Daya, which is compassion. And then we'll also recap today's principle of Sati. Okay?
Hare Krishna. How is everyone doing? So welcome to the Sadhaka program today. I hope you're getting my emails. This week I sent an email about the introduction to Bhagavad Gita and also about the first chapter. Did you all get it? Okay. So please check your email so that's how like we all can stay connected. So I also sent you guys a set of questionnaire about the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita. It's in a word format. So I thought if we had already read it, we could discuss more about it. But that's all right. Don't worry about it. We still can discuss about it. So we can discuss a few topics about it. It's basically 15 questions I sent it to you. So what we can do is I can go through each questions and we can discuss further. Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha Ki. So we can have an interactive session so everyone can participate based on your understanding and realization and knowledge about Bhagavad Gita. So the first question is, why is the Gita known as an Upanishad? So, does anyone have any clue about Upanishads? Upanishads give more information about the Vedas, and the soul, and nature of this material existence and everything. So, why Gita is known as an Upanishad? Because it is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. And it is one of the most important Upanishad. That's why Gita is Bhagavad Gita is called as Gita Upanishad. So, okay. The next question is, using the example of the doctor and medicine, describe the spirit in which the Gita should be read. We all read Gita all the time. So, what's the procedure and what's the spirit we should all have to read Bhagavad Gita? So, let's say, if I have a disease, and if I go to the doctor, and the doctor gives, he hands me over a medicine, and then says that, please take this medicine thrice a day, and do it for 1 week, and after that your disease will be cured. And if I am a wise and a wise person, what would I do? I just follow the instruction, right? So if I'm not a wise person, what I will do, the doctor said, but I want to do it my way. So what I will do is, I will just eat it once a day and then, for 3 days and after that, I can't really go and demand the doctor that, oh, my disease didn't go away. What's the problem? Because you have to follow the instruction of the doctor, you know. So you have to take the medicine on a particular time of the day, and you should take it regularly to make sure that, you know, your disease gets cured. So that's the example. In such a way, Bhagavad Gita should be taken or accepted as it is directed by the Gita himself. So Gita himself, itself meaning Krishna himself, because Krishna is not different from the literary expansion. I mean, Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, they are literary expansions of Krishna. So books which describes about the name, pastimes and qualities of Krishna, they are not different from Krishna. So when we take Bhagavad Gita and we read it, we are actually interacting with Krishna. And Bhagavad Gita itself is very prominent because it was spoken by Krishna himself. So we have to approach in such a way how Krishna wants us to read Bhagavad Gita, so we actually get the full benefit out of it. So some people say that, oh, do it this way, do it that way and stuff, and then like we all get lost. So we should follow the instruction of our spiritual masters, and we should follow the instruction of Krishna himself, so we can get the full benefit of reading Bhagavad Gita for our perfection. Okay, so the next question is, referring to Bhagavad Gita 4.3, chapter 4, text 3, what are the two qualifications which Arjuna had for understanding the spiritual science of Bhagavad Gita? Does anyone know?
He was Krishna's friend, he had a relationship with Krishna.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Anyone else? She already covered one major point. Anyone else? Exactly, you got it. So, those are the two main qualities. So, for understanding Krishna, Arjuna had the two main qualifications, which is one, Arjuna was his close friend and he was also his close devotee. So, which actually applies to us as well. So, if you want to have a loving relationship with Krishna, if you want to approach Krishna, we should approach him. You know, we can approach him in different ways. For example, in the scriptures it says that one can have a personal relationship with Krishna in five different ways. So one can have a neutral relationship, one can have a relationship as a friend, one can have a relationship as a lover, one can have a relationship as a servant, and one can have a relationship as a parent. So you can play around with Krishna, you know, like a friend or a parent or a lover. So we can have all this relationship. So one of these most prominent relationships is the friendship. So Arjuna was a close associate of Krishna and he was also a big devotee of Krishna. So for us to get into the relationship, the easiest way is to become a devotee of Krishna, so we can understand the mystery of Krishna, because Krishna is very mystical. Very good. Well done. So the next question is, what is Swarupa? Swarupa, does it ring a bell? You should know that. What is Swarup? Swarup means?
Original form.
Exactly. So Swarup, the Sanskrit meaning of the Swarup is form. So in this particular case, so the Swarup actually talks about our eternal form. So all the living entities, they all have a particular eternal forms. But because of our material coverings of the heart, so we can't really experience our spiritual nature. Because we have so much in our heart. We have, you know, qualities like, you know, greed, envy, anger, and lust, and, you know, we got all these kinds of things. It's all right. There is nothing wrong with it because it is the way it is. So what we need to do is like, we need to practice the teachings of Bhakti Yoga. So all these coverings, you know, gets washed away from our heart. So we can actually experience our real self, our real Swarup. So that particular stage is called as Swarupa Siddhi. So Swarupa Siddhi is our final destination. So in that particular form, we can have relationship with Krishna. You know, I explained about the five different relationship with that, with you know, we can have with Krishna. So it will be one of those. But it will be one of those. So to attain that, we have to perform the devotional service, so that our original Swarup or Swarupa Siddhi will be revealed to us by, in Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that it will be revealed to us by two things mainly. One is through Guru, and another one is, three. One is through Guru, another one is through Holy Name, and the third one is actually by Krishna himself as a super soul. Everyone knows here that we have an individual soul in our heart, and we also have a super soul in our heart. So by performing devotional service and washing away all this, you know, the contaminants, our original eternal form will be revealed to us through the Paramatma feature in our heart, or through the Holy Name, or through our own gurus. Okay. Too much philosophy, is it? So the next question is, referring to Bhagavad Gita 10.12, why is Krishna more than merely great? So we can say that, oh, this person is great, or that person is great. Okay, this person is very good with arts, that person is very good with singing, that person is really great with money, or, you know, things like that. So we have opulences here, you know, name, fame, or like beauty of the body, and there are so many opulences. So, but I may be a good singer, but I could be a bad artist. You may be an excellent cook, but you may not necessarily be an excellent singer. So, in that sense, we are all conditioned to a certain extent. We can't actually have all of them. At least we don't have all of them. So, in that sense, the only person who is full with all the different kinds of opulences, Krishna. That's why we worship him. So he has everything. He has unlimited beauty. He has unlimited, skills. And so he has everything. That's why we worship Krishna. So he is, in that sense, he is more than great. And it's also mentioned in that purport that, so Krishna is called as Parabrahma. So he is the Supreme Brahma. Because a lot of the yogis now, you know, they are more focused on Brahman realization. In other sense, they want to merge into the light part of the Krishna. That is called as Brahman. Everyone knows about Brahman? Brahman is actually the light which actually comes from the body of Krishna. So the yogis who focus on doing the Ashtanga Yoga system, they try to merge their individual soul into the Brahman concept, which is actually the light which comes from the body of Krishna. So Krishna is called as Parabrahma. And it also says, Krishna is also called as Paramdhamma. So he is the supreme abode or rest of everything. Everything rests on him. So in one of the verses in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that like all the pearls which are strung on a thread, everything rests on him. So, you know, living beings, non-living beings, everything take refuge in him. Everything rests on Krishna. So finally, we do so many things, we have so many problems, and then we'll be like doing so many things to fix things, and after that, oh man, I can't really take it. I don't know how to do it. Okay, Krishna, please help! And then we just go and like surrender to Krishna, and then like Krishna fixes it. So that's the beauty. Everything rests on him. So, you know, our mind is so tricky. So just surrender and do everything as Krishna prescribes. But we don't do that. Our mind rebels all the time. And then like, don't do this. And then after that while, we just gets like beaten black and blue. And finally we go, oh Krishna, I have no clue what to do now. So I need help. And then we go to Krishna, and Krishna will take care of. So in that sense, like everything rests on Krishna. And it also says he is Saswatam, which is he is the original person, Divyam, transcendental, and Adidevam. So he is called the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ajam, the unborn, and Vibhum, the greatest. Okay, important question, next one. What is the purpose of the Gita? Anyone? Yeah, you can tell whatever you want to tell.
Anyway. It's like the manual for life.
Right? Exactly, yes. Good, good. You, Kelly, you want to tell something?
Just to instruct us that we are not these bodies. I forget. There's like this one main purpose to forget.
Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of things.
Yeah, that's the most important realization we all should have.
Bodies.
Yeah, we are not this body. If you have that framed into the heart, then all our actions will be like so perfect. Yes, that's a great point. Anyone else want to guess?
Correct knowledge, exact knowledge, perfect knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. To get the right knowledge of what is right and what is wrong and what needs to be done and what not to be done. So yes, that's true. It gives the correct knowledge. Yes. Anyone else?
It also kind of explains who God is. Like, you know, who Krishna is. Interchangeable. He says, I am this, I am that. In very great detail.
Right. That's true. That's what we...
It's just knowledge, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Personality.
You could say, okay, Krishna, why should I worship you? And he's like, here's all the reasons why. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, which is quite interesting because Charlie's the other day asked me the question, why should we worship Krishna but not other gods? That's exactly the same. Krishna gives all the reasons why he is the greatest.
There aren't other gods.
Well, I mean, they are.
In theory, I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It's philosophy, like, there's only, even in most other religions, there's only one God.
Yeah. So, anyway, I will read the answer. The purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from the nescience of material existence. That's what Prabhupada writes in the introduction. So, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from the nescience of material existence. Okay. So the next question is, what are the five basic truths discussed in the Gita? So
I know.
Oh yeah, you know. So the answer is Ishvara. Ishvara means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Krishna himself, one. So the second one is the jivas, which are basically all of us. And the third one is prakriti, which is the material nature. This material nature, everything, moving and non-moving objects, everything is material. Time. Time is a very important factor, which is kala. And karma. Karma means activity. Action. So we have Ishvara, which is Lord Krishna, who is the Supreme Controller, the Jivas, which are us, the Prakriti, the material nature, time, and we have karma.
Krishna says he's time.
Yeah, Krishna says, yeah, exactly. Krishna says, time I am. So, yeah. So the point of reading all the Vedas and Vedantas and Upanishad is to understand these basic principles of, you know, Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, time, kala, and the karma. So Krishna says, all these things are basically comes from me, so just worship me, and then you know, everything else can be taken care of. Right. Okay, so the next question is, which of the five basic truths is not eternal? So the answer is karma. Karma is the only one out of all the five which is not eternal. The rest all is eternal. Ishvara, Krishna is eternal. Time is eternal. The Prakriti, the material nature is eternal. All of us, the Jiva souls, we are all eternal. The only thing is, because of the coverings of the heart, we actually don't experience the higher taste that we are all eternal. Okay, next question. Most of you people know the answer for this. What is mukti? Anyone? Yes. Anyone else? Apart from that, any points? She explained it in one word, liberation.
Liberation.
Yes. Yes. That's true too. So Satchit and Ananda is our eternal nature. So we are made of, we are Satchit Ananda. We are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Right? So to get into that position, to feel the Satchit Ananda is a state of liberation, because we are not conditioned. So mukti or liberation means freedom from material consciousness. So what is material consciousness basically? It means the gross identification of I am this body. That's basically about it. It's purely bodily conception of life, body conception. I am Satyanarayan, or I am Kali, or I am Maha. Like that. So we identify ourselves as bodies, and then like, I am an Indian, so I should act in a particular way. I am an American, I am an Australian, you know, I am African. So these are all bodily concepts. I am black, I am brown, you know, I should act only in this particular way, you know. So, yeah. So to get us out of this is mukti, which is the liberated state of our mind consciousness. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, mukti is defined as liberation from the contaminated consciousness of this material world and situation in pure consciousness. So what is pure consciousness? Pure consciousness means God consciousness. Material consciousness means body consciousness, basically. Next question. For all the yogis out here, what is Brahman? I just explained it 5 minutes back. Anyone want to guess?
The light from Krishna.
Yeah, the effulgence. Effulgence or the light which emanates from the body of Krishna is called as the Brahman.
I can't remember one of the things I was reading a while back. So it's like the rays of the sun. It's not the sun itself, but it's the rays.
Yeah. So it's explained as sun and sunshine and the sun rays. So Krishna is the sun. We are like the rays which actually emanates from. In one sense, we all are qualitatively equal to Krishna, but not quantitatively. Is it right? Am I telling the other way?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's basically Brahma. So the next question is, what is Sanatana Dharma? Sanatan, anyone want to guess? Sanatan means eternal. So, Sanatan Dharma refers to the eternal occupation of the living entity. So, we actually talked about our different relationship with Krishna. So, that's a function. Let's say, I'm a friend of Krishna, or I'm the father of Krishna, or I'm a lover of Krishna. It's a function. So it's basically the eternal function of the eternal living entities, which are basically us, in relationship with the eternal Supreme Lord, Krishna. Okay.
I thought that Sanatana Dharma was or could have been identified as a separate philosophical tradition.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I learned in a class.
That's true.
It was like, identify as a different religion.
Yeah. Yeah. They have this Sanatan forms, actually. Forms meaning like the groups, Sanatan Dharma forms in India. So,
I just didn't
want to
get confused.
Oh, no. Most of them, they focus on reading the Vedas to understand about these five truths which we discussed before. You know, studying the Vedas or studying the Vedantas or studying the Upanishads. Everything to understand about the Ishvara form, the Ishvara feature or the Prakriti, how this material nature works and how where the Jiva souls are coming from and all those. So I think most of these Sanatana Dharma forms, groups in India, they focus on reading the Vedas and the Upanishads and Vedantas.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm asking.
Oh yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. What were the five truths?
Okay, anyone wants to answer that question? So, we talked about Ishvara. Ishvara is Lord Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second one is Jiva, which is we, the Jiva souls, right? And the third one is Prakriti. Prakriti means material nature, which includes both movable and non-movable objects. And the fourth one is
time.
Exactly. The Kala. So time is eternal. And the fifth one is? Exactly. The fifth one is karma.
Karma.
So these are the five truths explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Yes?
What do you mean when you say karma is not eternal? Because isn't the concept of karma always there? Is it not? Like, what do you mean?
Okay, so we are all came with karma here, right? We all committed some karma and we are all here. At the same time, we have the little minute independence to decide what we want to do in the future. So that's always there. So we are like cat in the wall. I always explain that fact. We are always in the cat in the wall. You know, you can jump into this side, which is the internal energy of Krishna, which is Krishna himself, or you can jump on the other side, which is the external energy of Krishna, which is Maya. So you always have that minute independence to do whatever you want to do. So our focus is to jump on this side, to focus on Krishna, so we can get out of this karmic cycle, the samsara cycle, right? The samsara cycle. Exactly. So if you dissolve it, if you actually get into the stage of having your own eternal swarup, your eternal form, that's eternal. If you have a material body and if you are still in the karmic cycle, then, you know, it's not eternal.
But if you dissipate your karma, is the potential there for it to reemerge or no? Once you become an eternal body or...
Once you become eternal, you actually go back to Krishna or to the Vaikuntha planets with your own swarup, with your own form. And if you go there, Krishna assures in Bhagavad Gita that you won't come back. You will be there eternally serving him.
So where were we before then? In the sense that were we not with Krishna at the beginning and then we came back?
Yeah, that's a big question. It's a big controversy question.
Oh.
So where we were, originally we were not with Krishna. Yes, it is. It is a big controversial question. But a lot of acharyas, they say that don't worry about how you came here and why you came here. Just focus on how you can get out of this place. Don't worry about why I came here. Like, I was with Krishna. What am I doing here? I'm suffering here. Just don't worry about it. You act in such a way that you are happy here and then you can get out of this body and you can be eternally happy with Krishna. Just focus on that. That's my answer.
So you can't make him mad up there. You can pause
All right, we move on. So explain dharma. Okay, I will read the science for you, but since a lot of you are new, dharma refers to that which constantly exists with a particular object. So the example given here is heat and light along with the fire. Without heat and light, there is no meaning to the word fire. Because when we talk about fire, we always talk about the heat and light. Similarly, we must discover the essential part of the living being, that part which is his constant companion, which is Krishna. That constant companion is his eternal quality, and that eternal quality is his eternal religion. So in a broad sense, if you hear some of the lectures from Hindu theology, they also explain dharma as religion. So according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that don't worry about all the religion, you know. He says sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam bhaja. So sarva dharman means all the dharmas. Just don't worry about it. Just surrender on to me. You know, mamekam sharanam braja, meaning like just surrender on to me. Aham tvam sarva papebhya moksha ishyami masuchaha. He says that abandon all variety of religion and just surrender on to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. So some people say this is your dharma, that is your dharma. You should act this way, you should act that way. So for us as a devotees, we have only one way, which is just to follow Krishna. If you follow his instructions and his footpaths, then just don't worry too much about the dharma, that I need to do this, I need to do that. Krishna will take care of your life.
Also, dharma doesn't mean like the nature of things. Meaning like when you were giving the example of the fire, the dharma of the fire is to burn or give heat. That's the fundamental meaning of dharma?
I can explain it as a nature. It's a nature, but it may be your nature. Let's say my nature is to go and eat 100 pizzas a day. Okay, then do you think like that's going to bring me anything positive? I'm going to get stuffed and I will be like in the bed next day eating 100 pizzas. So my nature is to go and enjoy this material world. You know, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to run around like a crazy man doing this, doing that. But do you think that that's actually going to bring the happiness? Exactly. That's the point I was supposed to explain.
Yes. But to understand dharma itself, so when you are reading a deeper sort of philosophy or literature, then you know exactly what it's saying.
Exactly.
Rather than thinking that it's a certain kind of religion.
Right.
That's what I wanted to sort of clarify that.
Absolutely. So, as I said before, just follow the dharma prescribed by Krishna so that your life will be happy and successful. So, even though you have your own nature, which is a mix of goodness, passion and ignorance, if you follow Krishna's instruction and if you follow his dharma, you will be happy. Okay. So, the next question is, explain the material world using the banyan tree as an example. Okay. This is kind of a complex philosophy, so I will read the answers for you. In the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the material world is described as a tree with its roots upward and branches downwards. For example, if one stands on the bank of a river or any reservoir of water, he can see that the trees reflected in the water are upside down. If you go to a river, you can actually see like it's completely upside down, right? So the branches actually go downward and the roots upward. Similarly, this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So whatever we have, it's also there in the spiritual world. So the only thing is, this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So all we need to do is convert all our material activities and dovetail them to spiritual activities. So the easiest way to do is to add just one thing. What?
Krishna.
Exactly. We can, as Mahavishnu Prabhu mentioned, you know, in the class, so we can do anything and everything. For example, I can have a car, I can have a family, and then I can have a big house and everything. You can have all these things. But end of the day, it's all material. So to make it spiritual, what you do is you add Krishna to it. You have a big car, use it for Krishna service. Come to the temple, attend the programs, make it spiritualize. You have a big house, enjoy it, nothing wrong with it. Have a swimming pool, just, you know, go and swim every day, be happy. But you also invite devotees to your home, give them some prasadam, and then talk about Krishna, do some Krishna katha, and make the house spiritual. You make billions of dollars, no problem, no issues. You can have all the money, but at the same time, use it to a certain extent in Krishna's service. You know, donate some Lakshmi to the temple or do some preaching activities. In that sense, even though you are in the material world doing a lot of material activities, it can all be spiritualized by adding Krishna. So that's the next question. How do we switch our thinking from material to spiritual? I already gave the answer. So our thinking, which is now absorbed in mundane literatures and mundane activities, must be transferred to the Vedic literatures such as Puranas, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. So in other sense, How do we know what to do? How do we convert this material activities into spiritual? You actually get the advice from the scriptures. So the scriptures actually tells you exactly how to do it. So if there are three ways we can get answers for most of our spiritual questions. One is Guru, the second one is Sadhu, and the third one is Shastra. So Guru means a spiritual teacher, or a spiritual master, or some guide, and then sadhu, who is a saintly person, and shastra. Shastra means books like Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and the Vedas and everything. So you can get answer from these three different things if you have any spiritual questions. So these scriptures give us the understanding, give us the knowledge to switch our thinking from material nature to spiritual nature. Okay, last and final questions for the day. So, what is the secret of the Bhagavad Gita? I love this question. So, the answer is, Bhagavad Gita teaches one how to absorb the mind and intelligence in the thoughts of the Lord. Such absorption will enable one to transfer himself to the kingdom of the Lord. If the mind is engaged in Krishna's service, then the senses are automatically engaged in his service. So you don't have to artificially or like forcefully control your mind. If you are performing all the actions for Krishna, automatically your senses are controlled. And when you do service for Krishna, you actually feel the Sachidananda. Because that's your original nature. You actually feel eternal. You feel full of knowledge. You feel that happiness inside you. So, this is the art, and this is also the secret of Bhagavad Gita, which is total absorption in the thoughts of Sri Krishna. So, when we get into this stage, we are already in a liberated state. We are already attained the mukti, because all our senses are controlled and we are completely engaged in Krishna's service. Okay. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Any comments? Any criticisms? All right, great. So what we're going to do now is to wind up our class by chanting one round of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So it is right up here if you don't know the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Is everyone comfortable chanting? No issues? Good.